Blog Talk Radio.
Behind the Blue Curtain, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Discretion is advised.
All right, good morning, everybody. Let me get this stopped over there. All right. You know, this is the ninth show we've done on law enforcement suicides. The ninth. At 2 hours a show, that's 18 hours. Which is more than many departments even mandate in training for their officers and their administrative staff that makes the decisions. And before we even get into this we have a guest today that's just, you know, she's incredible. She's absolutely incredible. Before we even get to her, I got to go around and say good morning to everybody. Good morning, Big John.
Good morning, everyone. Looking forward to hearing from our guests, our courageous guests, and looking forward to sharing information and hopefully helping some other family out there that's going through these crises. And I just want to put it out there, congratulations to my eldest brother who is now officially 25 years in on the police department and is retiring within the next week or so. So, proud of my big brother who actually gave me the keys to turning my life around and making it possible. So, yeah, anybody in law enforcement, salute to you and your families who support you.
All right, let me go over and drop down to Izzy, who finally joined us. Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Good. Hey, all. Sorry for being late. Had to walk the dog.
walking the dog.
Glad to be here. Ready to get started. Good topics. Good discussion. Rough work week, but otherwise okay.
All right, brother. And then I got to go down to – this is my go-to, my ride or die. I mean, I'm talking 11:30, 12 o'clock, 1 in the morning. I called her, and she always picks up, spends time with me because she cares about me. And she's not afraid to tell me, well, Stan, you're causing this because you're doing this or doing that. Because she wants to fix me so I can be a better me to be a better y'all or us. And Dr. Cruz, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Happy Saturday. Cold.
Y'all cold down there in Waco?
It's cold. We've been below freezing for the last 4 days. You know, in Texas, we don't do real well with stuff like that. So we lose our sense of humor after the second day, especially with all the ice. We didn't have snow. We had ice. And I don't know if you've seen people try to walk to their car. In Texas, you never walk on ice, but it is entertaining.
Well, as long as y'all don't see Ted Cruz in the airport, y'all better start lighting candles. You know, I mean, that's just...
buckle down.
Well, you know what? Before I get to our guest, and you know, I want to say in my house here, you know, we lost our little dog, Lolly. Lolly spent 13 and a half years with my wife. Before she even met me, Lolly was there through a bad marriage, and she's a part of the family. And Lolly's health really declined severely the last 2 months. And that decision came, what do we do? And it wasn't really what do we do. I had to defer to what does my wife want to do and what does she feel comfortable with and support her. And, you know, we had to make that call, and she knew that call had to be made. And maybe she was wanting me to do it as the man of the house and all that. And I deferred to her, and we got to that point where one day I went up to her and I said, you know, we need to make this call in the next few days. And she told me, I already made it. You know, that to me is courage. You know, and the vet came out. Luckily here in Atlanta, we have mobile vet service that comes out. And they gave her the first shot that relaxes her, and my wife held her. And, you know, of course the vet took her and we went from there, but that's a hard decision. And people say, well, get over it. It's just a dog. Dogs are unconditional. They want love. They don't ask you for money. They don't say, I need a new iPhone. As a married couple, that was our first tragedy slash challenge. And for me, as the retired cop, the hero, I don't know what to do. I want to say stuff. And our guest today is going to really go into when you want to say, and you may mean well, but you're in the way. You're saying the wrong things. You're out of touch. And before I even get to our guest to introduce her, I want to play something. I got to say, for me, in my professional life, I've never had someone, and for all the shows we've done on police suicide, I have never had a spouse who said, I want the world to learn from what I went through and I suffered through so we can fix this. And this lady, we actually talked about 8 months ago, and she went through some stuff and she reached me back. She said, I'm ready to talk. And I'm about to play a video. And I want you all, don't take this lightly, because I asked her, can I play this? Can I share this? And she told me, yes, share it. So I'm going to ask the co-host at this time, everybody, so that this video is not interrupted by us moving around or making sound or something that will detract, if you'll mute your mics.
Because, I'm sorry to interrupt you. If I turn my video off, that's not going to kick me out, right? Because I just want my video off during this. Okay. I'm just going to kick mine off during this.
You're okay. But I want everybody to see this full screen. It is 10 minutes long. And for those that will say, well, social media, I don't have 10 minutes. This lady's courage means enough to us on this show that she's going to get all 10 minutes. Of this video, and I'm going to go to it. Let me get everything right. And we're going to go to it right now.
911.
I need a deputy to come to my house.
What's your address?
173 Valley View Drive.
973 Valley View, what's going on?
My husband has committed suicide for me.
Okay, what's your name?
Heidi.
Heidi, hand 1 second, okay?
I take a call from 373 Valley View for a 58.
Oh, my God.
Heidi,
I don't know. I think he's got a
everyone check if he has a pulse.
He doesn't have a pulse. I can see his hands and they're sweet.
He what?
Ready? Honey? Honey?
Honey?
Honey?
Honey? Honey? Honey? Honey? Honey? Calm down for me. Honey? 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 I need you to breathe. Heidi, talk to me.
Oh my God. Mary, but I don't know what he did.
Heidi.
What?
Breathe, okay. If you have to go outside, okay, just step away.
No. Oh my God, I have four kids here.
Okay. Honey, don't let them go near him, okay? Keep them out of the garage.
Honey, he's dead.
Honey, is he out there? Okay, ma'am, I have a deputy that's there, okay? Yeah, one second, honey.
Actually, about 8 months ago, and she had some other stuff happen with family members in her life, and so I told her, I'm here when you're ready to call me. What you all just heard was her courage. I didn't ask her, can I play that, or I wanted to. She told me it's okay to do it. You know, this show, we're critical of police and citizens, and we go back and forth. But we bring people here who don't have an opinion. They have a story and an experience. And this lady is a true hero to me, and she trusted me and this show and all of us on this show enough to say, I want to come here and tell this story. Sean, Vanessa, Dr. Olivia are on the line. They're standing by because they're part of this lady's story, which makes them part of this show. So at this time, you know, I just want to say, you know, good morning to our guest, my hero, Miss Heidi. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and thank you for being here with us and opening up and having the courage. Public doesn't hear. They don't get to hear from the surviving spouses. And I, like I told you before, you take your time. This is your show. I don't care about likes and ratings and clicks. You be you, because we as a society in America and as a profession of policing need to learn from you. So you have the stage. Take it away.
I know the public doesn't hear from the spouses. I don't know in what, you know, capacity it could even be really pushed out there. And I don't even think the spouses need the public support. We just want the support that we felt we would have had from, you know, the departments, from our families, from our in-laws. And I can't tell you how many suicide, and I call them suicide widows, in law enforcement and outside of law enforcement that I've met since he passed away. And almost every single story is the exact same. The shaming, the blaming, the ostracizing, the just not knowing what to say to us, and just kind of going like, ugh, like suicide's contagious or something. I wish I could find a way to change it. I don't know how, but just talking about it and sharing our story. And, you know, I talked with you yesterday about this, and the very first phone call I received the morning after he took his life, I came home, and it was 10:30 at night when I found him. So obviously by the time law enforcement and medics and all that had left, it was probably 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And the very, very first phone call, like 7 in the morning, was from his best friend. And he said, what did you do to him that would have caused him to do this? Because he would not have done this. He loved his kids. And I thought, what the hell could I even do to make him do that? And I'm like, it blew my mind. And from there on, I just kind of knew. And then he followed up with, can I have some of the ashes? Which I didn't give them, but it just spiraled in there, and blaming the wife. And at the funeral, there were a bunch of deputies that came up and said, you know, got down on one knee and took my kid's hands and held my kid's hands and said, even though your dad's gone, you still have a dad in us. And it took them. Some of them I still haven't heard from. And, you know, I'm not mad at them anymore. I understand it's difficult, but never heard from the ones that actually got down on one knee and promised my kids that they'd have their back. Never heard from them. There have been a few over the years that have started to come back, and I just think it's so uncomfortable for people, and they don't know what to say. They don't want to say the wrong thing, so like you said, they say nothing. But I'm telling you, the silence, it kills. It makes us feel horrible. Like, okay, well, everybody's abandoned us. Clearly, we must be the blame. What did I do? And how do I look at my kids? What do I tell my kids? You know, and it was just a hot mess from the absolute get-go. I was judged from the absolute beginning of this, with every step I made, as how I told my kids, what I told my kids, what I didn't tell my kids. It just blows my mind that this is how suicide widows are treated. Treated like a criminal and a suspect instead of the victim and a widow. at the end of it.
You know, I got some people that I want to bring
when
in.
When he passed, I waited. I didn't tell my kids the next morning, which blows some people's minds, but three of them went to school. I didn't sleep that night, and I knew this would happen on a Thursday. So I sent them to school Friday, and I had all day to try and figure out what the hell I was going to do. I was just a couple of hours that it bought me to get my head on, and I waited for my – I'm originally from northern Minnesota, and I waited for my family to come down so we could tell the kids together. And I took the kids from school, and we went and stayed in a hotel because I didn't want to be in the house. And I decided that I was going to wait until we got to Minnesota to tell the kids what had happened. But I didn't – my guilt took over, and I didn't want to kind of have a ha-ha gotcha moment with the kids that, oh, we're going to Minnesota. It's going to be a trip. And then all of a sudden, by the way, Dad's dead. I didn't want to do that. And I was sitting in the hotel, and my kids were with my mom across the hall, and I just had a moment where I'm like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right now. And I walked over the room where my kids were at with my mom, and I just looked at my mom and said, Dad, said, you guys got to get out, you know, take a little too. Because my youngest were 3 and 5, so they were just too little to include in that conversation at that moment. And my older two were 8 and 10, and they could tell right away that something was wrong. Why does mom look like this? And they said, what's wrong, mom? And I just got down with him. I said, you know how sometimes you guys, weird things in life happen, unexplainable things happen, bad things happen in life, and I can't explain that, right? So, yeah, what's wrong, mom? What's wrong? And I said, Daddy died. And dreams of my daughter will never, they will never leave my head. She was 8 and she curled up into the fetal position on the bed and was rocking back and forth, just screaming. And I said, you said he went back to work. And I'm like, I know, because I told him he was at work for those days because it had been 3 days. Since he had passed at this point. And that's when I got mad at Jesse. It was in that moment that I was mad at Jesse. I was pissed at Jesse. If I could bring him back and beat him myself, probably would have in that moment, for making our daughter and our son feel such horrifying pain. I was pissed. And then within a couple of hours of having to tell them, I had to get on the plane with Jesse's body and fly back to Minnesota where we were going to have the services. And I was just mad the entire way. Like, you did this. You did this. You're supposed to protect them. My husband killed my children's father. He didn't have that right. And I just spent so much time mad from then on out. And I took it out on a lot of wrong people, and I was angry at the sheriff's office. I was angry at his family. Hell, I'm still angry at a lot of his family because they've just been awful. But I promised my kids that minute that I told them, I said, I'm going to make this okay. We're going to get through this. My oldest son, like, his first question was, like, well, what happens if stuff breaks? I'll fix it. And everything that I've done with, you know, the suicide prevention, speaking on behalf of law enforcement in this, I've included my older kids. They're old enough to understand it in it. They've listened to the 911 call with me, and we took breaks in between, and we sat as a family, listened to it. And in the end, I said, well, what'd you guys think? And they said, you said you didn't know what to do, Mom. I'm like, what do you mean? I said, at one point, you said, I don't know what to do. I said, we've never heard you say you don't know what to do. I'm like, well, I didn't know what to do. I tell every day with my 15-year-old, I don't know what to do. It's the first day I have that old of a kid. So I'm like, it's a trial for everything. But it was an absolute ugly period of time. When we got back and I spoke with the sheriff's office, you know, they were all kind and sad and dealing with their own grief and all that. I found out, like, he died on the 20th, and I found out on, like, the 28th or 20th, something like that, that we would be losing our private health insurance as of November 1st. And the messed up thing is when I took my kids to the hotel room the very first night, my at the time, 5-year-old was jumping on the bed. And what happened? He fell off, and he bumped his head. And he had a big gash in the back of his head. And I immediately was like, oh, I better call his dad. I'm like, oh, I can't call his dad. But I'm like, well, when I heard that I wasn't going to have insurance, I'm like, what am I going to do with that? Now I really don't know what I'm going to do with any of this. I didn't know how I was going to feed my kids. I didn't know how any of that stuff worked. And there wasn't a lot of help to walk me through what to do. I was completely lost every day. I had to relearn and deal with grief, deal with raising the kids. What this does to your kids is just watching the kids deal with it has been the hardest, but most, how do I word this? Watching my kids deal with it is what has driven me to be okay. Because I realize if I'm okay, then they're okay. And no matter what emotion it is, if I'm feeling it, my kids automatically feel it. I didn't want to be fake with them. I didn't want to hide the tears. I wanted to be sad in front of them. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to be angry. I wanted to cuss his name when I needed to cuss his name in front of them. Because I didn't want them to think any of those emotions were wrong for them to have. We've all kind of utilized dark humor to get through things, and that's just how things work for us. And they're pretty damn good kids today because of it. I was going to say something, but I knew I was going to do this and forget what I was going to say.
Well,
when we got to the funeral. Go ahead.
No. Let me do this because we got somebody standing by on the phone who I called about maybe 30, 40 minutes before the show. And, you know, for me, ride or die. I mean, this is like my pinprick of friends that I've met. Through people like you and Sean and Vanessa, that is like right there. And they were like, I'm on this show. I'm following it. I'm going to be there. They're so in your corner. It's incredible. Dr. Olivia, are you with us? Okay, I might not. Wait a minute. 1 second. Let me get her mic unmuted here because I definitely want to get her input. Dr. Olivia, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, come on, baby. You got the floor. Talk to us.
Oh, my God. Wasn't that powerful? I have to tell you, Heidi is a truly amazing just woman. I love her so much. Just hearing that, I'm sitting here, I got a roll of toilet paper, I'm not even going to lie, and I'm former law enforcement, but when I hear that, it just breaks my heart, and to hear it, and then to see where she's come today with her kids and her family, she is truly an amazing person.
You know, she is. I'll tell you, you know, as cops, we see the bad stuff, the tough stuff, all the stuff, and we get to get accolades. We're going to stuff we're paid to go to, and everybody gives us credit. But
absolutely,
if everybody is kind of like, well, you know, shit hat bullshit. It really is. I'm emotional about this topic. I've never had anybody close to me do this, but we've done 9 shows on this now. And this girl, when Heidi called me, and we talked 8 months ago. She was on board. Yes, Dan, I'm going to do this. She had family things happen to where she had to take time away. But you know what's so funny? She reached out to me and said, I'm ready when you're ready. And I called her. And, I mean, this lady's story is so compelling. And for those, like we do this show, a lot of you citizens, you don't understand law enforcement. You don't know what goes on. You don't know. Police families are different. Then the stockholders' family, the lawyers, that it's different. It's very different. And, you know, for me speaking, when the shit hits the fan, the department runs. Everybody runs and separates till we see how this is going to play out. And, you know, they left her holding the bag, and I'm pissed about it. But where I moved from my point of festivity to my point of understanding and learning was when she started telling me how she came full circle. And I was angry at law enforcement, but I no longer blame them because they don't know. And for me,
I try not to be angry at them. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I was angry at them, but I was so angry at them. And Lord knows his sheriff, she'd be able to tell you she had to deal with several pissed off Heidi emails. And you know, I've since apologized. I hate that that's how I was in that moment. And the only thing I can use is temporary insanity. I was angry. We're all angry. We didn't know what the hell to do. But I don't blame them. I wrote an article in the very beginning of this called Because He Didn't Like the Color Green. And I wrote it because everybody kept asking, why did he do this? Why would he kill himself? You know, like his friend the next morning. He loved his kids. Well, of course he loved his kids. There's no question that he didn't love his kids. He was the absolute best father to those kids. He changed diapers. He'd feed them. He had no problem doing anything. I mean, he's a typical dad with something. You know, there's one day I came home and my daughter had, like, toilet bowl bleach all over her and the shirts all bleached up. I'm like, what? Yeah, she got into that. I'm like, maybe clean it off, but other than that, he loves his kids. He's just wrong in the head. But I've taken it back from being angry at them. And in the letter I wrote, it said, he didn't like the color green, and that's why he killed himself. People are like, what? Like, well, yeah, he woke up one morning, and he's like, God, there's green everywhere. He just got pissed off, jazzed, and he killed himself. You're like, what? I'm like, well, it makes just about as much sense as anything else I could tell you. Marital problems, financial problems, hated his job, hated his kids, hated his wife, hated life. Does any of that make it okay to kill yourself? Because every single one of us had marital problems, career problems, financial problems, all of that. And it's not an excuse to take your life. So the only excuse I have, and I will tell people, is green, the color green really pissed them off. So instead of blaming the job and blaming the upbringing and all that, it's just like green. Green. I first said blue, but then I realized with law enforcement, it probably wasn't a good idea to use the color blue. So I don't want people to be angry at the profession. I don't want people, I mean, you're free to choose your own emotion and thrive on that. That's fine. But I'm not angry at them. I feel bad that this happened to them as well, and that his choice put some unnecessary grief into all of their lives. And I don't want to use the word but here we go. I know his life has saved a huge number of lives just from talking about it. So that's where I rest easy on that.
You know, now you got a YouTube page, which is where I got the video that we played. And I'll tell you, I've worked hundreds of suicides, murders. I've worked all of it. And I come out of 25 years of that job, and you and I had this, which wasn't uncomfortable for you, but for me it was, discussion of, do you want me to play the audio or video, and what do you want? Because I understand from here and what we do with this show, we're not about likes and clicks. We don't care. There's no GoFundMe's here. Nobody's paying us here. We have no allegiance to anybody. But we want to bring people who are living through what we talk about on this show. And when you told me, I want you, and we talked this morning, 40 minutes before the show, I said, do you want the audio? The video, neither. What are you comfortable with? You said play the video. Because they need to see him. They need to see everything. And that, to me, is courageous. Even though, you know, people could say, well, I spent some time, she said, she said. For you to be that courageous, to champion moving forward, because this is something that our profession needs to grasp, get a hold of, and American society really needs to get a hold of it and fix it. Let me go down. Dr. Behavior. Talk to us.
God bless you, Heidi. Thank you for sharing. I like Stan, like Dr. Olivia, I need my tissue. I like to learn, and I think that that's part of why you're doing and being so courageous in this. So the question I'm going to ask is kind of twofold. The first one is the first side, and then we'll follow up with the second side. Did they do anything right? Did, in the follow-up after, is there anything that you can pinpoint and say, you know what, that was helpful. I needed that. Looking back, is there any of those moments? Because I know there's a lot of the other stuff we're going to talk about to learn from. But I'm just curious if anybody got it right afterwards.
Anybody else in the sheriff's office or his family or
anybody? Anybody.
I have a very close friend here in town who I didn't know how she found out about it, but somehow after I got my kids off to school, she's got security cameras everywhere in town or something. So I didn't call anybody and tell anybody. And she called me up and said that I know something's going on. Do you need me to come and pick up Piper, which was, she just turned 3. Her family is probably one of the number one reasons I made it through that first couple of years, because she was there. There wasn't a time I asked for anything that she didn't show up immediately. Her husband, her kids, they're all there. They were the biggest support for me. It kills me to say it, but when it comes to the sheriff's office, what they got right was how when we landed back in Minnesota, the flight attendant came up to me on the plane and said, are you the wife of the officer on board? And I said, yes. And she said, all right, the pilot's going to have everybody remain seated, and airport police are going to come and escort you off the plane and down on the tarmac. So you can see him being taken off the plane. And the sheriff's office had all of the officers there, and some, not all of them, but a good amount of them there, and from the medics and all that. So they showed their presence there in that moment, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. And they, kind of caravaned him back to our hometown. That was done right, and I'm grateful for that moment so I could share those pictures with the kids. From there on out, I just think they were so lost. There wasn't a lot that was done right. I know there was a lot of bickering between some of the officers as to whether or not to black stripe their badges for him, as to whether or not to even show up for the funeral. Rumors, I don't know if it's true, but some of them were upset that they weren't going to be paid if they showed up in uniform, because if you have a uniform on, you should be paid. That I don't know if it's true or not, but it would shock me. There isn't a lot that they got right in the beginning. I had asked, in the month leading up to the one-year anniversary if they had anything planned to do for the kids. But I didn't want anything. We didn't need anything. I just wanted them to do what they promised to do. And at one point, I was asked, well, what exactly are you looking for? What do you want us to do? I'm like, I don't know. His family minus one. Oh man, no, it was bad. I received a handwritten letter from one of his family members listing every single thing she hated about me and how I drove him to do this. She said he had coffee creamer in the fridge, so she knew he wasn't going to kill himself because he wouldn't have left coffee creamer in the fridge. That one still puzzles me. And to this day, I don't speak with her. There isn't a lot that was done right in the beginning. He was the guy that everybody said, and he hears every single time, oh, he's such a good guy. He never would have done that. Yeah, he was, but you didn't know him. You didn't know him like I knew him. And so I think it just caught everybody off guard. Nobody knew what the hell to do.
Thank you. So then the follow-up to that is, where can we learn? What can we do differently? I'm making a list of hits and misses of just things that people can be mindful of, whether it's police suicide or just suicide. every bit of everything that you're describing, right, the stages of grief and how everybody just goes through it in their own way, and there's no linear way. You know, it's a big squiggle. There's no way that you don't go through anger and get out of it. Anger flares back up, depression flares back up, bargaining flares back up, denial, all of those things, and will continue because that's what happens when we try to make sense of things. What are some other things that we can learn from your experience to try and do things better? It sounds like there was some secondary kind of victimization that happened, unfortunately, whether it was intended upon or not, the outcome is the same. And so I would really love to be able to educate people on ways to handle things better for the people who are left behind from suicide. So anything that you would like to offer us, I know that's a huge umbrella. You've been doing an amazing job, by the way. I cannot imagine how difficult any of this is. So you're giving to us in knowledge and emotion and walking back through this is unbelievably, as was said, courageous and just, it's amazing. So, you know, we're kind of here to learn, but if there's, where did they drop the ball? What was one of the things that you're like, don't ever do that to anybody that's going through something like that? What's something that maybe they missed it? Maybe.
Don't make a promise to a kid you don't intend to keep. You know, when he got down on a knee and held my 10-year-old boy's hand and said, you got a daddy in me still, and then you don't call, you don't write a letter. Don't make a promise you can't keep. Shared in my video that 911 call, I did that because if I didn't, that was all on me to carry. I needed to hear it because I had already forgotten what exactly happened that night. That's obviously what trauma does, and I didn't want to forget. I wanted to do this. I wanted to expose myself to it and not let it eat me alive and not forget it. I needed this. I needed it for my kids. It was my way of sharing the load and having everybody help me carry it. People need to, number one, just shut up. Quit with the judgment. And one of the best forms of therapy for me is helping people. I help people every chance that I get, and that's my therapy. So people just do that and just sit with their mouth shut and go, what can I do? Or not even ask, what can I do? Just think, what is something this family, not my family necessarily, but what is something this family would need? I know they're going to need food. I know they're going to need their lawn mowed. I know they're going to need whatever it is. Just show up. You're not going to be turned away. The families aren't going to turn you away. I barely even knew this woman. She was so sweet. I didn't even know her husband had taken his life probably about 6 months before my husband. And he was probably the one who, he was on the scene for her husband's suicide. She was just 5 months before my husband. And he was probably the one who, later she was on the scene for her husband's suicide. So it was crazy. But anyway, she was just quietly in the back way, told me why she supported me and that she'd be there for no matter what. She was 5 or 6 years later, and she didn't even know. It's just those little acts of kindness that the families need. I didn't expect anybody to pay for his funeral. I didn't expect anybody to show up at my house and hand me, you know, handfuls of money. I didn't expect anybody to show up at my house at 1 o'clock in the morning and wipe my tears. I just wanted somebody to be there if I needed to talk, to help me carry the load. And I was so horribly alone for a good bit of it that it just sucked. So, like I said, if they just show up, keep their promises, think, if this were me, what would I need help with? Go pay their light bill. I mean, that's going to help them out. And, you know, or, like I said, go mow their lawn, buy them some groceries, offer to take the kids out for the day. Just think, how can I help lessen this family's load?
You know, let me.
Dr. Johnson had a question. She asked if there's been any organizations that you found that have been helpful to you as a widow that you might suggest for other widows who may be in the same situation.
Organizations for widows that would help. I don't want to throw names out necessarily with what there is an organization that I would not suggest people go to, but I'm not going to
put the name out on here just because I don't want to put myself in trouble. But I did get involved in one organization that I helped actually build and create, and I was absolutely used through that process. I met this woman probably 6 to 8 months into the loss, and she was building this organization for honoring those that have taken their lives, and I didn't know where to start with it. At one point, she'd asked me for a loan to put on a conference, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And it was $5,500 or $6,000 loan, I think I gave her, with the promise of having to pay back the next week or the next day, whatever it was. And it took about 9 months for me to actually get that money back. And then when I did get the money back, she said, well, I want to give your money back to your kids. Don't go hungry. After I was actually on the board of directors for this organization, and I stepped down not once but twice because I didn't agree with what was happening. They use families and manipulate women, get their stories, put it out because they want the blood and gore of it for the likes and clicks. Like Sam said, he doesn't do that. Well, this one does. And I was told that at some point they're going to have to stop using my story because my story would get old and there'd be a new height need to put in my place. And I'm like, what about healing and growth? Isn't that important to kind of tell people that, life goes on, but that's not how it is. If I were to recommend any organization for a family to help them get to the right place, it would be the Save Call Now, the Armor Up. Oh, my gosh, why am I drawing a blank on? Olivia's going to have to help me out on that.
Serve and Protect would be another one.
Let me do this.
Serve and Protect every
day. Yeah, that's Vanessa in the background. And Vanessa's here to support you, Heidi. Dr. Olivia is here. Sean is here. This is a hard show for anybody to do. It's a hard conversation to have in a cafe, much less to the world. And, you're my little sister, and I told you, I got your back. So I got some warriors with me. Vanessa, that was you, I think, chimed in. Can you come in and kind of add into this?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We got you.
Okay. Yeah, I actually met Heidi after she was coming out of that organization. So let me back up. I actually met her when she was on the board of that organization. You guys remember my own story. I had reached out to that organization for help as well, and they didn't help me either, and I ended up with a gun to my head in my own home because of it. So after that, I had heard that Heidi had resigned from that organization and reached out to her and realized she never got any help either. And so that's where our organization stepped in, Safe Call Now, Armor Up, and Serve and Protect, and said, this is not okay. This is not okay. You can throw a number out all willy-nilly about how many suicides there are a day, but when you're not actually helping people, there's a problem. And when people aren't addressing that issue, there's a bigger problem. So we stepped in and offered Heidi some services, but not only that, just walked her through her process. And through that, we've become family because, listen, the broken can lift the broken, and Heidi has valid pain. And just walking her through that pain has been quite a journey. I love her. I love her kids. They're my family now. But I think it's infuriating that organizations take advantage of people like this. I think it's infuriating that we're adding trauma to her trauma, not just through organizations, but even the departments, because they don't know what they don't know. And that's why I get so upset. And I know I hurt Jim's feelings, and we had a nice chat after one of our labs on suicide, because these political answers that we get from chiefs and from members of the IACP and the FBI and their ridiculous numbers they're trying to throw around, there are faces behind these stats. There are people behind these issues. And that's where we have to reach in. That's where they're not doing it for the right reasons. They're not doing it to save people's lives, to bring healing, to bring hope. And that's why we're doing it. That's why we're here. And so when I hear about a suicide and I see that picture online, that's not just a picture to me. That's a family. That's someone that needs help. That's someone that needs someone to walk them through. And, you know, I sat in on that stupid IACP, let's help officers with suicide committee meeting, whatever it was. And it was just a bunch of people patting themselves on the back for work that doesn't help anyone. And I left there furious. They were like, oh, we should create our own hotline. There is a hotline. I was sitting in the room. So, you know, it's just infuriating. It's absolutely infuriating that these people are having these meetings. And meanwhile, mothers like Heidi are hugging their children and comforting their children who just lost their dad, who don't understand what's going on and where to turn and who can help them. You know, there's no parade for Heidi's husband who died by suicide. There's no fundraiser for that family to help walk them through it. There is, we can't talk to them because it's going to pull our own pain back out. It's going to remind us of our own issues and our own pain and the fact that we don't know what to do here. And meanwhile, these women and these children, and I think that's the worst part of the whole issue, is not one person is stepping in to say, I'm here, let me help. I'm here, let's do something about this. And we see it on a daily basis. Unfortunately, Dr. Olivia is the best of the best, and I'm going to shamelessly plug Dr. Olivia Carlson, Dr. Johnson, sorry, because her work is unparalleled. She is not just researching law enforcement suicide. She's not just throwing a number all willy-nilly out there at the Blue Wall Institute. She's actually doing the work. She has data proven, scientifically proven on, okay, here are 10 factors that every single one of those officers had that died by suicide. Now we can work with that. We can do something with that. We can train on that. We can put that in departments to say, hey, when you start seeing this in your officers, call Safe Call Now. Move on it now. Because Heidi, I'm sure much like myself, and we've talked about this, there were so many missed opportunities to save Heidi's family and my family from what happened. And I'm not a widow, thank God. There were 3 suicide attempts. One was homicidal, and I came out of that. But there were so many missed opportunities by the department where Safe Call Now could have been called and intervention could have happened. These are not unfixable problems that are killing people. These are 100% fixable. We're just not addressing them. And I know Dr. Olivia is... Let me add to those 10 fatal factors.
I mean, because you just tapped into me. Because I was about to say, I want Dr. Olivia and Dr. Cruz to talk to, and it's not about villainizing policing, all that. It's not about that. I didn't work with policing. I work with people. And I want both of them to really spend a minute and let them go back and forth into what's failing, what's not being done, what's not being understood, because we can't hold the flag and bring out the bagpipes when you're killed by a guy robbing a liquor store and then run away and hide because you're killed because all of the pressure that department, and trust me, ladies and gentlemen, y'all see those men and women on the street. You think, oh, they're just the peons. They're the ones out there doing the legwork. They're nobodies. They don't have any rank. You know what they're carrying? All the demands of not just the police department infrastructure, but the political people, the special interests. It all gets dropped on them. We need more arrests. And they're going to work going, nobody's doing anything. We'll find an arrest. Then they're the ones on YouTube. This is where we are. This is where we are. So, Dr. Olivia, Dr. Cruz, y'all go back and forth for a minute.
If I can interrupt real quick, because I know about the 10 fatal factors and all that, and I completely agree with them. And the department can do everything right and have an excellent program. You can't make a horse drink the water if the horse isn't willing to drink the water.
Mm-hmm.
So even there's a ton of departments that are doing right thing and offering all these services and already in our city. But if you're not willing to get the help, there is God himself isn't going to save you if you can't put yourself in it.
So I'll kind of jump in, Dr. Johnson, on my side of it. What I say is the thing that most of us forget because of the badge and the uniform and all of those things is that police officers are human. They're dealing with human experience, their own human experience. They're dealing with stress. They're dealing with guilt. They're dealing with all of the things that individuals have to deal with on a daily basis. Those things don't go away because you're going out to be Superman every day. In fact, those things become heavier. And in all honesty, because of the type of human that you're experiencing every single day. So not only do you have your own experience, but then you have the worst of society's experiences as your normal 8 to 12 hours shift. I think at some point we have to try and practice some empathy about what life has to be like to be in these types of first responder situations. Obviously, we talk about police officers, but there's a number of people who deal with society ills every single day. And if we don't have individual coping skills to deal with our own stuff, and then we start piling on everything else that everybody else is dealing with and expecting us to be supermen and women, it's no wonder that things start to feel overwhelming and start to feel like an out or an option out is a better option. And the reality of the situation, if we can give some time and some distance to the stress that we're in, it's not as bad as when we're piled up, it's all piled up on top. So the thing that I would argue for people is empathy. You know how hard your own life is, and you are an accountant, or you are a teacher, or you are work in a convenience store, and it's super, super difficult for you. Then we throw in all the emotional stuff, the danger, the everything we talk about, the brain's reaction responses to stress. It's no wonder that we're in this situation. I don't think it's shocking to anybody, especially for the experience that people are having. I think what we look for as humans is responsibility and blame. That's typically what we like to do because it helps us feel better that it won't happen to us. If I can blame you for happening to you, then it'll never happen to me. And then I don't have to worry about it because that happens to someone else. And that's just not realistic. Suicide can affect any of us at any time. And we know that life stresses and strategies, the lack thereof, contribute to it. And so I would just go back to just the bare minimum of being a human. And just how difficult life experiences are, and then you calm down police officers that they're under, and we can see why we come to this particular situation. Dr. Johnson, what would you add?
You nailed it. And, like Heidi said, too, you have to acknowledge, you can't lead a horse to water. You can lead him, but you never, you can't make him drink. But I'm going to tell you, these chiefs and these sheriffs, they need to acknowledge the water's there. And listen, the water's been there. We can give them these resources. We can give them the fatal 10. We can give them this training. And yet they turn a blind eye and they want a number thrown around, or they have one group that's getting all this attention and is wanting to is kind of wanting to take the lead on things, and yet they don't really know what's going on in certain areas. And I feel like we're really missing the target here. This is something that is preventable. We should not be dealing with this today. I mean, this has been going on for decades. Suicide is not a new issue in law enforcement. So what is the problem? The problem is, number one, we don't want to address that we are human and that we have human problems. And listen, folks, we are no different than the people that we serve in our communities. We have domestic violence issues. We have issues with anger in our home. We have, issues with our children. We have financial issues. We have addiction issues, which are part of this fatal 10. And, Heidi, Jesse was at least a 7 out of 10. That should tell agencies that we have a problem and that you need to be doing something different here. Interpersonal relationship issues across the board for anyone, regardless of occupation, are issues in this country. And yet we turn a blind eye and we don't look at people getting divorced or having other issues in the home. And then we end up having suicides or murder suicides. We have got to stop pretending that we do not have issues and start providing this stuff in a proactive manner instead of everybody acting like they're upset when it happens and saying, I wish they would have reached out. That's complete crap, and we know it, and we have got to do better. and these chiefs and sheriffs, they need to get on board, and they need to stop wanting to have some kind of, you know, somebody being famous or an organization that is important, that one organization is sharing, when we have organizations that are doing excellent jobs right now.
Now, amen. But before anybody dismisses what you just heard and say, oh, this lady's just angry, she doesn't know. Dr. Olivia, were you ever a police officer?
Yes, and I'm a military veteran as well. And I've worked on this over 15 years.
Mic drop. Let's go to a caller real quick. 509 area code 9130. Good morning.
Hey, Sam. Hello, everyone. It's Sean. Boy, I couldn't agree with the panel more. Heidi, thank you for being vulnerable out there. Sam, I'm going to say this. I'm probably going to lose a lot of money, and I'm going to make people really mad at me. But here's the deal. An attorney always told me in contract negotiations, you can't fire the whole team. You got to fire the manager. And so maybe some managers need to start getting fired, because here's what I see what's happening out there is we're the ones who answer Heidi's calls. That's what we deal with every day. And it's painful to hear those kind of calls. But guess what? Why aren't things changing? Because you know what? I'm watching everybody try to legislate and make policy, and I really want to hear what Izzy has to say about this. But they're trying to legislate and make policy out of the human brain. And you know what? You can't do it. There's absolutely no way. They keep trying to treat the profession instead of treat the individual. We're managing pieces of paper. We're not managing actually human beings who are out there that have, you know, normal human responses to abnormal situations. And I'm wondering why. And we're doing the same thing over and over. Yes, I've been to all these committee meetings in Washington, D.C., and they do pat each other on the back. But, you know, that's not giving me results, because my phone line's still ringing. And people like Heidi are on there screaming at the time, and they're hurting. So what I would like to know is what are these leaders going to do? When are they finally listening to the roadmap? The roadmap of the Fatal 10 is out there. They need to go ahead and take the roadmap and go. And this policy and legislation stuff, it's like getting us out of time. It doesn't work. Don't do it with the human brain.
Amen, brother. Let me bring another caller from the 218 area code 591. What's up, Rob? Good morning. How you doing, brother?
I'm all right. It's a little rainy down here in Texas, but it's not 20 below, so I'm good with that. I've been listening to you guys a lot here, and I got some stuff to throw in here. Hey, Heidi, how you doing? Anybody hear me?
No, I'm doing.
Okay. Right? Everybody can hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. A couple things here. As you're talking to a guy, I work with Jesse. I left the sheriff's office almost a year ago, early retirement medical, because, you know, some traumatic incidents. And on that 1 to 10 scale, yeah, I was a 7. Okay, I had it all planned out. I knew what he was going to do. Come down, if you're going to stop drinking or not be an addict or kill yourself, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. If you want to stop, you're going to stop. It's up to you. I'm not saying people didn't help me, because God Almighty helped me right from the get-go, but you got to make a step. You got to make the effort, right? And thank God my parents were good to me and taught me right and wrong, and my brother and my friend, and I could tell you my good friend Mike, who's still my closest friend on earth, kept me from hanging myself. Right. I was gonna do it, and problem is somebody's got to come clean up the mess, right? And what, 6 months after Jesse moved away and killed himself, I watched a kid do it right in front of me. Okay, and that was a game changer for me. That was it. That was on January 10th, and you know that thing spiraled down from there, right? You're gonna make it. You got to reach out. You got to reach out, right? And the sheriff had sat me down and said, what in the F is wrong with you? There's a problem here. We need to do something. You know, she can't send me home because I'm crabby or I'm upset, or she could tell something's wrong with me, right? So you know, there's a couple things here that, you know, there's all kinds of people out there that are going to help, right? And I could go to the sheriff, I could call the chief deputy and say, I need this, and they get it for me. I guarantee it. Problem is with the county. or if you work for the city, whatever city, you got to deal with the city administration, not necessarily the chief, right?
There you go.
So pushing blame on law enforcement leadership. Yeah, maybe there's some partial that you could do in some situations. Certainly not in mine. But if the county board gets a hold of it, they're going to be like, oh my God, what are we going to do here? Once I finally went to a doctor, a couple, and thank God, I just called her Thursday, and she's like, you're amazing. Look how far you've come, right? But once you make that call, once you get out, life is amazing. I have become so far in the last 18 months.
Hey, Rob, can you turn down your phone? Whatever you have listening to Facebook or listening to the show, can you turn the volume down because it's taking the echo?
How's that, right, sir?
Yeah, that's better.
How's that?
Perfect.
Is that better?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So one more, a couple quick things, and I don't mean to be petty, but I got to set the record straight here, Heidi, that any rumor of anybody bitching about we didn't get paid to go down and get Jesse, that's so false. I was there. I'm the one who called it to attention and salute, and that never, ever at all came up, nor would it. I love the sheriff's office. I miss those people greatly. But it came down to the point where I'm going to hurt myself probably first before somebody else. And I had to throw in the towel, and I did. And I hope more cops are doing that. The problem is the state makes it very, very difficult. But that's a whole other topic for another show.
You talked to Ms. Harper for me.
Okay, let me go real quick to a caller real quick that was talking to 804 area code 1762. Need you to mute your mic if you're not on, because I had your mic open. But good morning, and we welcome you, and you're on with Ms. Heidi.
Hey, Stan, how's it going, man?
I'm well, thank you.
Hey, man, I know you talked to me this morning about that, but I just want to give Ms. Harper my prayers, and I just want her to be strong for the kids and walk by faith and let God lead her through this cold storm that she's going through right now.
Right,
hold on, brother.
It's Billy Brown, right?
Yes, it is, my brother.
All right. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much.
In that case, pray for Miss Heidi herself, my hero.
I know. I'll keep you. Okay.
All right, brother. I'm going to drop down. Let me get Izzy. You've been listening patiently, brother. Let me get you in here because we are wrapped a lot so far.
Yeah, I don't know how much I can lend to the conversation. Heidi, I mean, you're going to hear this all day, but thank you so much for being here, and you are a exceptional woman and mother. In my little bit of experience, I've only been a journalist for 6 years, a little bit over 6 years now. I've been covering policing for that entire time. Nothing that I've heard today surprises me or is news to my ears. It all suggests a pattern, both socially and in policing. For me as a journalist, one of the problems that I have, and I'm constantly frustrated by it, is the news cycle that we have that doesn't allow us to have long conversations about this. I'm constantly frustrated by the fact that I get told that we can't post a story, be it on officer wellness, officer suicide, use of force, anything like that. We can't post a story one day because we posted something similar to it 2 days ago. Or, oh, we can't talk about that because we talked about it last week. So we can't, you know, it's old news. I'm very frustrated by that constantly.
COVID's been running nonstop for 2 years, though, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, exactly. It's the whole
if it leads, it leads concept. Mm-hmm. Civil guides a lot of journalists today, and I find it very frustrating because we're not going to solve these issues if they're not being, if they're not in the public eye constantly, continually, all the time. Because otherwise, if it's just on this news cycle, people forget and they consider them isolated instances, and they don't realize how often it happens. They don't see the people that it affects and the residuals to it. That's what I'll say about that. The other thing I'll say is that when it comes to policing and the members of the police force that I've spoken with over my time in journalism from the white shirts down, I encounter apathy and selfishness more than I encounter ignorance. And I think when we talk about policing, we still rightly so have that urge to kind of jump to the defense because there are so many good, honorable, hardworking people that are doing this profession that we don't want to be too critical of it when we talk about certain topics. But I think a lot of times what happens with that narrative is that we use the line of, oh, why are they still doing this? They must not know better. They must not know. And I have yet to encounter anybody who doesn't know what's going on. I have yet to encounter anybody in policing that is ignorant of what this of the numbers, ignorant of the realities, ignorant of the solutions. They're not. They're apathetic and they're selfish. That's what I encounter, and it's very frustrating. But you either have someone who's been so beat down by the system that they're like, there's nothing I can do. We have a culture that it's a high ceiling as long as you lay down and shut up. I have more officers who talk to me after they've retired than when they're in the force because police departments silence their own when they're misconduct and your conspiracies. They silence people who talk about officer wellness, who talk about community policing, who talk about officer suicide. They silence them. So that's what I encounter. And I think if we're going to evolve in this area, we have to kind of force ourselves to be a little bit harder on policing than we have been and that we find it in our power to be. Because too often I hear people talking about cops like, oh, they're fighting the good fight. They just can't know about this because they can't know about everything. The higher-ups know. They've been hearing about this, like the other doctor said, for decades. There are reports. There are academics. There are studies from every university around the planet has been investigating this and talking about it for decades. And the reason they're ignoring it and the reason they're not dealing with it is that they're apathetic and it doesn't serve their purposes. It doesn't serve the dialogue and the narrative because if you're going to talk about it, then you really have to get into the fact that you have a corrosive culture that is leading to a lot of these things happening. And it's easier to slap a Band-Aid on it and keep going and get that press release and get that funding that gets that story gets you and get the publicity that the story gets you and all that other stuff, but they don't push the other level. So that's my thing is that I encounter mostly apathy. I don't encounter ignorance. They know what's happening and they know what needs to be done. And the reason they're not doing it, especially in your larger departments, is it's not politically frugal to do it.
I don't, for his department, I don't think it was for a lack of apathy. I don't think they had, I want to ascribe apathy to them. I think they cared. I don't even know how to describe it. I think it's almost like the sex ed talk with your, kid that's going into fifth grade. Like, you don't really want to have that talk. And then once you have it, then it's like, oh, okay, it wasn't that bad. I don't think for one second that any of them didn't care about it. How the hell do you start that talk? In for my family situation, it wasn't, I don't think it was all the, if Jesse wasn't a cop, would he be alive today? I do believe so. But that's not because he was a cop. I'm trying to explain this. He grew up in a toxic environment. I grew up in a toxic environment. Most people I know seem to have grown up in some sort of fallacious, toxic environment. But his mom, she is the most wonderful woman ever, but she's schizophrenic. She's been schizophrenic since right after his little sister was born or right before. I don't recall. But she was unmedicated. She would She was an artist. She was a Russian teacher. She'd scream crazy things in Russian and just scare the hell out of these kids growing up. It, not by any fault of her own. She was unhealthy. And he was raised his entire 18 years in that environment. And then he's a very black and white person. So I think the law made sense to him going into, and that, you know, the law is a law. It's very black and white on its surface. And then when he got into it and realized it wasn't as black and white, and there's a whole hell of a lot of gray areas that officers have to make decisions in, and that he didn't have as much control over that as he thought he would have. And so I think with, like, some of the stuff that Dr. Johnson does, I don't even know how to explain it. She could explain it better. But just looking at the officer's background and where they come from and what they grew up in, I think we should have a stronger vetting process for our officers and really dive into their backgrounds, because when you put a broken person in a broken system and it's told to fix everybody else, it's no wonder we end up being already broken and being trying to help somebody. And granted, there are many. I would say there are more officers that do a full career run and come out just fine. And yep. That is amazing, and those are great. And there's some that get into it, and all of a sudden, all of the broken shit that you've got in your life comes mm-hmm. to the surface, and mm-hmm. here we end up. So I don't think it was the job that killed him, but if he was a banker, I don't think he would have had as much of that stress on him versus being a deputy.
Heidi, can I throw this in real quick? And I want to tap on so many experts here. Dr. Olivia is still here. I want her on this. I want Sean on this. I want Dr. Cruz on this. And Sean, you and I, cop to cop, forget all the aesthetics, all the counseling stuff. This is me and you talking as police officers. We are thrust into a world of shit. And yes, we make good money, and people can say, well, we make more money than the average worker in the city, so therefore people say we're making good money. People tend to think that we have problems and families, and we're not robots. We have to deal with all this shit. And people refuse to acknowledge, and when I say people, I'm not talking about citizens. I'm talking about police administrators, policy people in the city, your politicians. You send us into the worst of the worst and expect us to work miracles. These people took 5 years to turn their marriage into a shitstorm. And you send me there and you want me to settle it in 15 minutes and make everybody happy. That is unrealistic. And then you send us in individually, whether we be black or white or Hispanic or Asian or whatever. We come in, we are human beings. We will naturally hone in on that understanding. I grew up like this. I understand this. I feel this. And we're trying to do the best we can. And we're taking it home. And, you know, I work for me in Waco. I work suicides, or not suicides, some suicides, but shootings. With kids that were drug dealers, low-level penny-ante drug dealers. They weren't shooting at people. But you know what? When I saw them on the street and I walked up to them as a cop, we're talking 90s, 1990s. We talk about this new wave out here. We're talking about when crack was it. And everybody had to hit movies. And these young kids would come up and hug me. How you doing, Officer Mason? You all right? All of them knew where I lived. All of them knew where I lived. But when I went to their shootings, whenever killed in the drive-by, it comes with the profession. I'm not knocking. You know, it is what it is. You take that risk, you know, you could have gotten what happens, happens. But I spoke at several of their funerals, and that raised a lot of eyebrows. This guy was a scumbag drug dealer. He was just saying he got what he deserved. This is what I heard in the roll calls. This is what I heard from my peers. Nobody took the time out to say, well, Stan knew this kid. This kid lived three blocks from Stan. I know that. How does Stan feel? Stan's right there in the middle of it. He's not getting shot at. See, this is where I think that the professional policing, not the officers on the street, but the administrators have become so politically constrained. They sign on to a political message. They don't know what's happening on the streets in the lives of people. Well, I don't have time for all that. You know what you do have time to do? Go talk to the officers that work that area and ask them. You know what you're going to find out? It ain't about race. It's not because they're black. It's not because they're Christian. And you're going to find some shit you need to fix in how you approach problem solving. Dr. Olivia?
I'm here.
What are you thinking so far?
Oh, this is right on. You know, I just posted in the chat. I think Izzy nailed it, though it may not be the case for everyone. I think being apathetic and I think being fearful, we have a lot of agencies that are concerned about stuff getting out, being discovered, and we all have baggage. We all have that stuff there. And that's the stuff, if not dealt with appropriately, that's going to end up being these red flags we see later on when we talk about bad behavior, right? When we have bad behavior, this is not the time to try to keep it from the media and shove it under the rug. That's a red flag that something is going on in this officer's life that needs to be addressed. Whether it's a bad decision, whether it's an addiction or substance abuse or dependency issue, whatever it is, we need to address that and we need to get to the core of that. And those are the things that are popping up that we want to all the time put under the rug and act like it's no big deal. And we should, you know, these officers see a lot and we shouldn't, you know, get them on everything that they do wrong. But here's the deal. We should be held to a higher standard. We are the ones upholding the law. We should be held to a higher standard. And we need to have these officers who are doing things that are problematic or questionable, we need to bring them in and find out what's going on here, right? I had somebody say the other day that, you know, if an officer got a DUI, that maybe we should give them a little bit of a break. And I said, are you serious? Like, here's the deal, folks. We hold people accountable when they're out on the road under the influence, and we tell them even things like it's the ignorance of the law is not an excuse, drinking and driving, you know, go to jail, all these little, you know, things that we throw out there. We need to be held accountable for our bad behavior. And what happens is when we turn a blind eye to the bad behavior in our agencies, regardless of what it is, we're only stacking the deck against this officer, especially when we talk these fatal 10 things. We're stacking the deck against them. We just don't know when the cards are going to fall. And if you're willing to take a chance like that, then, you know, these agency administrators should be held accountable for that as well.
You know, now I'm going to
go. I think, like, Rob.
Go ahead, Heidi.
Like, what Rob was trying to say when he was on him, I was having a hard time hearing him, was it isn't the sheriff, like, you know, he worked for a sheriff's office. It wasn't the sheriff that wasn't doing the right thing. It's quite literally the county administrator. It's all those people that tell the sheriff what she can and can't do and create the policies and make it. So she's sitting there, you know, with lame duck. She can't do a damn thing unless they change it. I know years before Jay took his life, there was an individual who worked for the county. He worked for the sheriff's office, worked for the county, and an officer that did, he was involved in a relationship with a deputy that worked at the county. But so this young man was killed on the job, and his girlfriend, a deputy at the time, if I'm remembering right, she was treated poorly at the time too. She needed time off work to heal from it, and they just kind of railroaded her with all that stuff too. So it isn't the sheriff that's doing it, but they're the ones that take the brunt of it, and everybody forgets that it's the other elected people that are screwing everything over on the end of it. I mean, in his office, she could only do so much. And it took me years to finally realize that, oh, she's not God. She can't just wave this wand and make all this stuff happen. So it isn't just the chief and sheriff. It's like all the people that are running the shit show behind that we don't really think about.
Can if I can
and
add,
like with
no, no if I
can
add,
okay, here.
When you talk about all the people running the shit show, let's talk about the people who won't vote, don't vote, won't register. You're electing the people, Republican or Democrat, Stan don't care. But you're electing the people who are running the shit show. So that makes you part of this hit show. Somebody said, can I jump
or
in here?
Or you just vote for something because you know the last name or it was the person that's always
Amen.
Been in that position. So you just fill that bubble in instead of actually. And I'm to blame for that, too. Up until the last couple of years, I wasn't political at all. And now I'm, God forbid you were on my Facebook, you're going to. Oh, God, let it go.
And let's drop this bomb. Or we vote for them because they're the same color as us. Never mind you never
yeah,
met them. They don't live where you live. But we vote
yeah,
by color.
Brother. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, Sean.
Look. All right, Rob here. Can I jump in?
Oh,
I'm here.
Yeah, good. Go ahead, Rob.
So, hey, sorry to jump in here, but a couple things, Heidi, is when that happened, when Zach got run over and killed, that was Sheriff stepped up hard. I'm going to get a little emotional here because Bridget was my partner, but that, Sheriff stepped up for her so big. It was amazing. And then after Jesse died, after Jesse went, there were some changes, and we had to go. Is my audio still bad?
I am so sick of shitty leadership accepting fat paycheck without direct responsibility to the public directly, and you have no problem accepting full responsibility for that paycheck and all the benefits that come from it, but then we want to coddle bad behavior and allow bad behavior to continue and then bitch about the policies that we are the ones who are responsible for as leaders. If a policy doesn't work for me as a leader, I should change it. That should be what happens. Policies change based on who you have working for you and the conditions with which you are charged and working. So if something was done that's over 30 years and it does not work in today's technology, then you change the policy, you don't try to force the round peg in the square hole. You just don't, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm so sick and tired of leadership coming in like they're Clint Eastwood in situations that they feel comfortable in, and they're the ones that are going to call this shot. And then when everybody's looking around saying, hey, this is a really big problem, and we're losing people, they're like, the policy says we can't. The policy says we can't do that. I am sick to death of shitty leadership. I am tired of everybody wanting that responsibility until it comes time to actually do the difficult work. And so that's the piece that I throw in on this, is that I watch all these Lone Rangers run around here, and then when it's like, all right, put that paycheck to work, everybody's like, we'll defer, that's a policy issue. No, that's unacceptable. That is the part that we have to stop allowing leadership to do. Because for me as a leader, if you work for me and you're not a good leader, you need to leave.
Now y'all see where I love Dr. Cruz. I love being some Dr. Corcor. You know, let me go.
But I think the sheriff's office run like a business. It's their business. But when you put business before people is where you run into the problem. Like,
there you go.
Jesse was promoted to sergeant years before he passed away. And when I went to the sheriff's office after he died to speak with human resources and figure all, you know, all the legal stuff out that I had to do, he hadn't had a funeral yet. And so this is how soon I had gone there. He hadn't even had a funeral yet. They had all of this stuff in a used cardboard box sitting outside in the hallway, and I'm not trying, I hate that I'm even bringing it up, but I'm not trying to talk bad about them. Again, I've already said it's an awkward thing for all of us to have gone through, but we need to learn. It was all literally put in a cardboard box on the floor, and they said, there's the stuff, you can take from it what you want and leave. If there's anything you want to leave, just leave it. And there's somebody that was already moving in, so it's a business. I mean, and it was just sick to see it because, like, well, he was a person, and that was his name tag that was on that door just a hot minute ago, and now he's just. But then I go, well, what the hell did you expect them to do, Heidi? And like, I don't know what's right, I don't know what's wrong. I certainly think they could have been more tactful in their approach than, you know, having it in like an old food service Cisco box, but. My point is that, like I said, when you start putting business before people, this is another one of the problems.
Because it hurt. They didn't have to go home with a shitty beat up box. I had to take it home with a, you know, that silver clipboard that they've got that's like this thick. I'm like, what the hell do I do with this? You know, and but side note with that is that the good thing is that my daughter Paris had drawn this little picture that said, "I love you, Dad," and it was just, you know, she's probably 6 or 7 when she drew it. And that was in that box, and that's what I used for his funeral arrangements, was the picture that his daughter drew for him. So I am happy I got that back, but not happy the way that it all went. And, again, I just think it's a learning curve.
Let me do this.
People just need to do better.
Let me do this real quick because we're down to, wow, 20 minutes. It's going to go quick. Heidi, I promised you, I told you, it's going to go, like, superficial. I want to get final comments and give all of our callers and guests time to give them, because these are people that have experience and, of course, the co-hosts. And so we can all go away and learn something. This show is not about likes and clicks and views and shares. And Stan don't care. It costs me the same amount to do this with one view as one make. I don't care. There's no GoFundMe's here. There's no donate to us. We do this. The co-hosts come here on their own time. Dr. Olivia, I got to bring you up. Can you sum this all up? What do we need to fix? What's wrong? How can we, as not just the police, but as society, do better?
First thing is we need to become people. We need to become people, if you will, right? We have thrown the people to the side, whether that be officers or members of the community. We are a nation that is rushed. We are self-absorbed. We have got to start plugging back into the people in our community and the people in our agencies and start taking care of people. And what we're too busy doing is taking care of people as if they were equipment or numbers, right? And we're cycling them through. And what we don't understand is how we treat them and how we take care of them is how they perform at home and on the street. And we can only tell you so many times, you know, how many of these risk factors do we need to see and how many officers need to be arrested or injured or killed or die by their own hand before we start taking note of how we can change this. Police work needs to stop being reactive and it needs to start being proactive. And we can only give you, like Heidi said, we can only lead that horse to water. We can't make him drink. And if people refuse to let him, you know, get that drink, then that shows a lot about the character of the agency in general. And I think when one starts standing up, more will come and they will stand up and they will say enough is enough. But we have got to stop this. And I'm sick of people crying whenever we have a suicide when they know damn well that we could have done things before this happened, right? They could have done things before this happened to help this individual and they turn a blind eye to it. And now we have people like Heidi who have to live with that. And we have many, many more that are dealing with this right now, that we have officers on that list of 10 that are maxed out and no one's saying a word. We're turning a blind eye. And then when something bad happens, we all want to start placing blame on everybody else about the situation. So we need to step up and we need to do better. And Heidi, I thank you a million times over for coming on here and being vulnerable and sharing your story and sharing, you know, what needs to be done, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I cannot thank you enough. I love you so much.
And Dr. Olivia,
thank you. I love you too.
I got you here, so you know me. I love you to death. You know, you're in my dot. I'm going to ask, you know, everything you said, I want people to understand something. I don't care about MSNBC, Fox, CNN. I don't care about all that. The number one killer of police officers over the last 4 years in this country has not been people. It's been suicide. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, the last 2 years, it's actually been COVID. But because the numbers are a little elusive that we track, and it is. And listen, Stan, I told you the last time that we talked is, if the FBI is willing to track law enforcement officers killed and assaulted on duty because of those top risk factors and the things that are injuring and killing them, suicide should be looked at in a way that makes sense and not just tracking 5 data points. I can give you 5 data points by looking online and pulling up some, you know, and I can make some pie charts to make it look pretty. We need to get to the real root of the problem, and that's why they need to look at it, because it is a leading killer.
Now, I want to go back to you real quick while I got you. Because I just admire you taking time out and being here. You have a system. by which I want you to take a minute. We got time, but I want you to take a minute. You know, you have UCR reporting, uniform crime reporting, and statistics that the government gathers. But you have yours. Talk about your data points that you collect versus theirs to give clarity to the listeners.
Sure. So what they're looking at are five demographic points. We're talking sex, race, age, that kind of thing. Five or six data points. That gives me nothing to go on as far as the why behind suicide. I currently track law enforcement suicide, have since 2017. It's called the National Law Enforcement Suicide Mortality Database. I track 50 data points. So we get those basic demographics off the way, but we track the agency that you work in, the type of agency, the number of calls you get, the number of sworn and non-sworn, your military status, and not just that you were a veteran or which branch, but how many times you've been deployed, what areas have you been deployed to. We track marital status, the number of kids you have, childhood trauma. Now, of course, we got a ton more here, right? But we don't get all of these we don't get all these data points with every case. We have to research that. I apply for autopsy, toxicology, police reports, media stories. Whatever it is, we search for it. We look for officers who were even in trouble or under investigation. Those are in my file. You know, we can't turn a blind eye to this stuff. It's there. And the difference is, with this information, that's where those top 10 came out of, right? The fatal 10 and those things that are killing our officers, that is the answer. I can't lead you any closer than telling you these are the things that are causing our demise or causing a bad outcome because, listen, suicide's a final outcome. We get DUI, we are under arrest, we have domestic violence in our home, we're getting divorced, getting separated, having addiction and dependency issues. Those are bad outcomes. We can stop these bad outcomes from happening. So I can't only lead you there and tell you what it is. You've got to do some work here.
Okay, guys, and I have a quick question. Who funds you? Who pays for all of this?
That, it's all self-funded right now, and it's very expensive, and it's very timely. But I'm going to tell you what. If we save one life from this, that's all that matters to me, or one family from being broken up, or one agency from a litigation, right? That's the whole thing behind this, is we want to start being proactive with this information.
And I just can't believe that there's not more police officer organizations.
No. Of course, I'll tell you. No, they're not interested in that. They're not going to do it. Why have we done? This is the ninth show, the ninth. Izzy's been here longest. We've done our police officer suicide. At 2 hours each show, that is 18 hours. I will say to all the listeners, Google your local police department and see how much training time is allocated to police suicide. I guarantee you this show on our money, which none of us have any of, has given more to this topic with expert guests, such as Heidi, that the city won't match. I don't want to say they don't care. I'll say it's not lucrative for them. And I call out to the police unions. You care about the officers? You say you do? Then why are you not pushing this? You push political candidates. You push everything else. Every police union, I don't care if they're black or white, fraternal order of police, Texas Chief Police Association, whatever. You're not making a dent in this. Statistics show you. And on this show, we're not letting your ass off the hook because we have our Heidi. We have our people like Dr. Olivia. We have Sean. We have Vanessa. We have Dr. Forts Cruz. We have Izzy. We have people that will bring you the statistics, and we're not going to do it here. It's simply because good men and women are dying. Because basically, the cities that hire, to some extent, don't give a shit. And then they want to throw people like Heidi, it's your fault he did this. What did she say at the top of the show? It's your fault. You should have done. You should have been. You know what? I was 25 years as a cop. I've been married now only for 7 years. My wife does know 90% of the shit I dealt with. I didn't bring it home. When I worked a dead body that stunk to high heaven, you can wash that thing, that uniform, 10 times. It's still going to smell like that. You got to hang it out in the air. So I would change clothes before I walked into the garage and came home. And so there's so much to policing that the community doesn't know. It's not because the community doesn't care. It's because we as an institution of law enforcement have not been transparent enough to say, guess what? We're not heroes. We're not superhuman. We're not greater than thou. We hurt. We have infidelity. We have, I'm pissed off because my wife made hot dogs instead of pork chops. We deal with all the shit y'all are dealing with. And then to the officers, I go out on the street, and I, being any officer, that's a shitty neighborhood. Everybody there is a scumbag. They're not worth a quarter. But you know what? Those scumbags that 90% of the department thinks is full of shit, come up and give me a hug. Come up and give me a dap. What's up, Stan? How you doing? You all right, Officer Mason? Man, look, you went to my grandma's house. They doing they wrong shit. But it's their job not to get caught, my job to catch them. But when I go back to the department, I got that shit on my head. Oh, you ghetto lover, you this, you that. So when I hear Heidi's story, and I look at whatever her husband saw on the street, dealt with on the street, however he was on the street, and then the Blue Brotherhood, the family, we're all one family. And what she shared here, it goes, me and her talk, a lot deeper than what folks are hearing here. And she really gave, she kind of toned herself down as far as the credit. But for what, how she, this lady got treated, how she got treated by law enforcement, which I will not call out right now, I'm pissed off about. This lady got left in the dark. Your husband committed suicide. Goodbye. Sorry. Yeah, he worked here. Have a nice life. Y'all pay for everything. That is the system that Sean and Vanessa and Dr. Olivia and Dr. Cruz are talking about. This is a problem in America. It's not a statistic. More officers are dying from suicide than are being shot by citizens, but we're always hearing, I was in fear of my life, so therefore, you know, the lawsuits should be thrown out. It's justified. That's bullshit. And this lady came on, and Heidi, I'm going to give you the last word, but let me drop down to Izzy. Last words, brother. What you think?
I mean, I'm going to expand a little bit on the thing I said about apathy and selfishness. When we're talking about the higher-ups, like Corsi was talking about, like Heidi was talking about, your leaders of major departments, your city managers and stuff like that, that's where I'm going to lay it down to. It's a personal, purposeful, intentional lack of caring and a purposeful, willful ignorance on the topic. Because if it wasn't last January, in January, the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund released their yearly report on officer deaths. These guys managed to go down in detail and distinguish between officers who died in collisions, between officers who were in car accidents and officers who were clipped by people on the street when they were giving tickets and stuff like that. But the one statistic that they left completely out of it was officer suicides. Wasn't in there at all. That's purposeful. When you have a majority of states in this country that will remove insurance and pension benefits for the families of officers who have committed suicide, that is purposeful and intentional. It's when you get down on the ground, when you have your officers that are on your street, your guys in the blue that are working in the departments, that's where you get the apathy that isn't I don't care, it's that I can't care. You get these officers that come in, and like Heidi said, they already have trauma, and then they're beat down by a job constantly, day to day, where they see the worst things happening constantly. But they also see that if you speak up and try and talk about things, it either goes nowhere, you're answered with silence, or you're punished. And therefore, they develop that apathy because they have to. It's almost protective. They get numb to situations because they see that nothing changes and nothing improves. And that apathy leads to the neglect where they don't know how to deal with situations. They don't know how to talk with the families. They don't know how to engage because they've shut themselves off because they've encountered too much trauma and had too little support. And that's the distinction that I want to make. But that's all I got to say.
Well, you know, bro, damn. I mean, I've been on here all this time, and you just kind of nailed me right on down to when I should have said all along. But let me go over to Big John for 2 minutes, who's been sitting back listening to all this. And I know, John, this is out of your wheelhouse. It's not something you have a lot of it, experience in. But I want you as a co-host on this show, somebody whose career, and you earned your spot here, not that we have a recruiting tool. You got to hear from this lady. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to thank her again. I do relate to her more than people would think. When she said that she first had to tell her kids that the father was at work, someone had to tell my children that I was in college because they didn't think my kids would old enough or could handle their father being in prison and then have to go back and correct. So there's a lot of things that I do relate to. How inexpensive it is for a friend to take kids fishing or getting them involved in some type of sporting event. But I want to bring this back to what this show was intended for, and that's the survivors. And I say survivors because I know she's talking to a lot. And my question to how the children, did they receive any type of therapy after the passing of the father? And people had you to blame, but did you feel that it was unjust because you had no one else to blame? You had no one to blame, but I know you said that best friend, family member pointed fingers at you, but you had no one. And my final piece to this is that if there's such thing as closure, right, what would you say to the next widower or widow about finding closure, if there's such a thing?
Well, first for the kids, it might shock some people, but as of now, no, we have not had any sort of therapy, and that's based on our choosing. I grew up with a psychologist for a mother. She unfortunately passed away just a little over a year ago. I kind of self-treated the kids and me, and it worked for us. The four kids are doing excellent. They're on the honor roll. My daughter is in theater. My son's a hardcore computer nerd who built two computers, and like the very first Christmas where I bought him that computer, he still has that one, and he's a guy. You don't even know how much money we put into that thing. But if you were to meet my kids right now and had no idea of their story, you'd have no idea they went through the hell that they went through. So it's worked for us what we've done. What was your second question? I'm sorry.
Well, I said people had you to blame.
I didn't blame anybody for Jesse's suicide except for Jesse, and I put it completely on him. I have said it from day one, and I'll say it till the day I die, and you can agree or disagree with me. Suicide is selfish. I don't think there's any other thing that is more selfish than suicide. That's not same, and I'm just crediting the team that a person with suicidal ideation has. I'm not saying that, but it for us and for my kids, it was selfish. So, and the only person to put that on is the person who killed Jesse, and that was Jesse. He killed my children's father. Then the third one was what? Because I have a memory of a gnat.
If there is such a thing as closure, what do you say to the next family as far as trying to find closure? And
it's not your fault. It's not your fault. Quit blaming yourself. Quit going over in your head and driving yourself crazy as to what could I do? How could I have, you know, not seen this coming? Hell, I never in my life would I have imagined I was going to come home to what I came home to. And not only that, just the way in which he chose to kill himself was confusing and all that. I mean, it's all so confusing. And I just want the other women and men who deal with this to know that it's not your fault. Plug your ears.
be cautious. If there's an organization that approaches you, like what happened to me, and they're willing to put your story out, and you haven't been in this for at least 2 years, run. Like, run as, like, I want you to beat feet and get the hell out of there and leave those people alone, because they're just exploiting you and they're going to use you. If you have not been dealing with it for 2 years, you are not in the right frame of mind. I don't care how strong you think you are, because I think I'm a pretty resilient person, and I should not have been doing the stuff that I was doing when I joined forces with this previous organization. And I think for officers, I think when you go into law enforcement, ask the department questions. You know, I'm giving you me to help the community, but what are you going to do for me when the shit does hit the fan, when, you know, the dead kid on the side of the road does impact me? What are you going to do for me? I think we need to be a little bit more proactive with ourselves and our own mental well-being, and make sure we're signing up with a company or organization, sheriff's office, however we want to call it, that's going to have our best interest at heart and put people before profit or business. A couple of the other things that I wanted to say, like, a lot of people thought that we got into this because I wanted Jesse's name on the law enforcement memorial wall. I don't think there's any place on that law enforcement memorial wall for officers who take their lives, not because I am angry at them or I, you know, whatever. It's not, that's just not for that type of death. It's for line of duty death. And a lot of people will disagree with me on that, but that whole process of being on the wall, it doesn't even matter for the officer. You're already gone. If people shift their focus to helping the family, helping the kids, it's just a much better expense of our energy than trying to get his name on a freaking plaque. It doesn't matter if his name's on a plaque. He's not here anyway. Take care of the people. Okay, I wrote some stuff down. Oh, and then organizations that, like, Olivia and Dr. Johnson touched on it, the sharing of the numbers. What the hell does the number matter? I go, let me look up, you know, some people treat that number like a daily forecast. Like, what does it matter looking at the number? Oh, we've had 150 killings this year. Okay. What are you going to do with that? I mean, how is that number going to stop anything? I think, if anything, it makes people lose their absolute shit over it. It does nothing. It's stupid and irritates me. It's equivalent to asking why. It's a pointless question. It's a pointless thing. Yes, we need to keep track of it, but I don't think it needs to be published every single day, like the COVID numbers every single day. Well, here's a new one. Another one did it. Another one did it. One of the things, too, I wanted before we go, Rob said he did have, I believe it was getting a little emotional for him, some of this, but he wanted me to say, for officers that are out there listening, if you're struggling, please reach out. I paid for my own therapist, and I'm alive today because of it. Life is good now, and I'm happy. But I reached out, did the EMDR, but you have to reach out. And I misspelled something, but you have to be the one to reach out. So, again, the leading the horse to water.
But to your point, Rob, I don't want his comment to go dismissed. It's very relevant because he was a police officer, right?
He worked right alongside my husband, and I've known Rob for probably 15, 16 years.
Amen.
And he worked right alongside him and knows my family and has actually stepped up to the plate and he and a couple other people from the sheriff's office started a fund, and they're going to help pay for my son's first car, because he's going to be driving here in a couple of months. So it's pretty cool. Dad can't help him get the car, but the other guy's going to help get his first car. So
I need to stay off the road if I come through there, right?
Yeah, well, you know, my son, my oldest, is cautious to a fault. I let him drive. I live in a neighborhood here, but I let him drive the car around the block. And he had a sucker in his mouth, and he was going uphill, it was very fast, like 13 miles an hour. And he said, oh, my God, what if I crashed and the airbag went off, the sucker was smashed? I'm like, bro, you're not going to crash. You're going uphill at 13 miles an hour. You're going to be okay. He's probably too cautious, so it's probably the scary thing is
but
he's
now,
too cautious.
Let me tap into you, because you and I talk. We're going to share a little moment here. And you know me.
If I could say one last thing before that, one last thing on my list. I'm sorry to cut you off. The other thing, too, and I was taught this several years back, is officers identify with their job solely. A lot of officers, that's their identity. And I was told, you make the job cannot make you. That job is going to be gone, and that job could be gone in 2 minutes. Now where the hell are you? If all you are, you see these officers that are off duty, and I've seen it on Facebook, on TikTok and all that, these wives will video record and their husbands driving down the road off duty cop, and he sees an expired registration, and he's just like, oh, they're driving, they've got an expired registration. It's like bothering him so much that he can't write a ticket for that. Like, dude, let it go. That is your whole identity now, is being a cop. You're not a cop. You're a person. You're a human being. And this, again, we said it all along. You're a human being. You're not a cop. That's your job. That's not who you are. But unfortunately, too many make that who they are. And it's bad. I just wish they would just let it be a career instead of letting it be an identifying marker.
Here it is. Now I'm going to ask you, Frank. That is, you and I talk. Big Prince fan. And you coming on and being who you are with what you went through, I respect it, love it, and appreciate you.
Kyle.
And I'm going to end. I'm sorry, y'all. I was coughing. Didn't want that on there. Dr. Corsi Cruz, nobody I could think better. Take us out of here. Take all this you heard and give us something to live by.
Humans are our greatest resource. They truly are our greatest resource. And it's time that we put our money where our mouth is. If we're going to treat humans like a business, then it's time that we start taking care of our resources. So what I would also say to the rest of us is, if you need your own buy-in to this, might we start taking care of the people who do the jobs that we could never do ourselves? These first responders and these frontline people need every bit of what we can offer, and the excuses have to stop. So my argument would be that humans are our greatest resource, and they deserve every bit of investment that we can offer for them. And when we do that, the outcome is that much better.
Well,
I can say one more thing, too.
Heidi, you're going to close this out, because it's only fitting that you close us out. You'll be the last words to hear today, because you earned it and you deserve it.
Anytime I've shared anything, whether it's I have a couple different YouTube channels, but the one that I'd share on here is, just look it up, it's Blue Hell. It's Blue, H-E-L-L. And that shares a lot of information of the bad organization. But anytime that I've shared a story, a picture, an article that I've written, at the end of it, I always say, just sleep on it. Don't kill yourself. Sleep on it. Go to sleep. Just sleep on it. If you're going to kill yourself, wait till tomorrow, because tomorrow never comes. So just sleep. Sleep on it. It gets better. You killing yourself, all of Jesse's problems were gone. Nothing mattered. He didn't have to deal with Pierce cracking his skull open in the hotel room. He didn't have to deal with the funeral aspect. He didn't have to pick up Paris and drag her into the funeral home when she's screaming, I don't want to go in there. I don't want to see Dad. I don't want to see Dad. He didn't have to do any of that. I had to do any of that. You think that your family doesn't care. You think your family isn't going to miss you. Listen to that 911 call again. I beg to differ. They're going to miss you. If my life has gotten better and my kids' names are Preston, Paris, Pierce, and Piper, if their four little lives have gotten better and stronger in the aftermath of this horrific suicide, it's going to get better for you, no matter what you're seeing on that job. It pales in comparison to when it's your family. when it hits right at home with your family and we're still able to thrive, I bet your ass you're going to get better. If you choose to get better. I chose to get better because I made that promise to my kids. Would I be here if it weren't for my kids? I think I would. I don't think I have it in me to ever just leave this earth. Not on my doing, I'm not leaving this earth. But when you're faced with tragedy, you're sad and all that, my number one thing that I can ever tell anybody is to help somebody else. Even when you're hurting, and just pick yourself up, get up and go find a way to help somebody else. You don't need to go and help them and tell them how sad you are or anything like that. If you want to, do it. But just get up and do some community service type stuff to help people. It'll help you out. But don't kill yourself. This is never going to go away for my kids. My kids are going to eventually get married. They're going to have kids. And Dad's not going to be there to see the grandkids, the great-grandkids. And my daughter won't have her dad to walk her down the aisle. It will never, ever go away. And now, not only do you traumatize your children with the immediate aftermath, my daughter is in eighth grade, and she's got kids that are making fun of her at school because her dad killed himself. This is what you do to your kids. Would you, you know, I've asked people before, as a man, would you walk in your house after working a long shift? Unfortunately, some might do this, but would a normal, healthy person walk in the house and punch their kids in the face? Just to do it. The suicide punches them in the face every freaking day of their life. Dad is a word my kids don't get to say. They don't get to say dad. All the concerts that we sat at, you know, and Christmas concerts and any program that they've ever had, Dad's not there. He will never be there. So is it better for them to suffer like that, or is it easier for them to suffer like that, or easier for you to just get off your ass and drive yourself to some therapy, talk to somebody, talk to a friend, talk to your spouse. If it's not working with your spouse, there's somebody that's going to listen, and don't give me the line that they're not going. Somebody cares. You're just too scared to go and get help, and it's okay. And I hate the saying, it's okay to not be okay. Like, think about, like, critical thinking would really help a lot of people out here. It's okay to not be okay. Well, okay, that's why we kill ourselves, because it's okay to feel like this. No, it's not okay. Go get some help and just push through. Sleep on it. Don't kill yourself today. Do it tomorrow.
Heidi, you know I love you. We'll talk later. But, baby girl, you did good. I am so proud of you for sharing your story, not just with us, but with the world. And I have to call on somebody else, and I'm going to hook you two up. But Heidi, she was, for the first time, this is my, like, mental go-to person, Dr. Corsi Cruz, who is my mental. When I'm fed up, I go to. And I called her this morning. She's in tears. Just off a little bit of your show. And I'd never seen her like that. So I think in light of what you share with us, I can only reciprocate by letting her close out this show for what she shared with me. Dr. Cruz?
I don't know how much of it I can share. I'll just say this. This is heavy. This is the experience that we would never wish on anyone. And so often people forget with the heaviness, and they get buried under it. So God bless you, Heidi, and your family for everything
Thank
you're
you.
Doing and all that you're doing to try and prevent this tragedy from affecting another family. And as Sam said, and as I mentioned to you earlier, I am definitely here if you need me. If I can help, especially in the teenage years, teenage years happen, I'm glad to assist however I can assist. That's something that I would like to do for your family. So if there's
Thank
something
you.
I can do, please know that I'm here. I've given you my contact information. And just know that we stand beside you, we stand behind you, and we're going to continue to try and get the word out to try and help other families as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to get out. Appreciate everybody. Heidi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, I adopted you, right? You're like a little sister. So
I got you now, so,
don't worry. And you always have a home here. No matter what show we're doing, if you have something to put in, you send me a text message. I want to be on this show because this is not my show. You know, it's not my show. It's our show.
I'm sorry. I just lost it. My thing went kind of crazy there. No, never mind. I am gone.
It's okay. I just want you to know.
Like a squirrel.
I just want you to know you're here now. This is not Stan's show. This is our show. Everybody who calls in, everybody who's a guest, we have no sponsors. We don't care about likes and clicks. We care about reality. And so, you know, if I put something up and you text message me, hey, Stan, I want to come on this. You're there. It's your show, too. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to get out. Appreciate you, Facebook, everybody that's tuned in, and we're going to get out. Everybody have a good weekend. Be safe.
Thank you.